from the People's Democratic Republic of Brooklyn, the great jazz pianist and composer Randy Weston with Marrakesh Blues. It's from his 1969 album, African Cookbook. Henry Teshier on bass, Art Taylor on drums, Azadine Niles Weston, his son, and Rebop Kwaku Ba, both on percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is the second day of Kwanzaa, so I greet you all in that spirit. It is the principle today to be observed is the principle of Kuji Chakulia, meaning self-determination. And in a way, that's exactly where we headed. We're taking a look at the year that's been. We're looking back at the year 2016. From your point of view, what do you consider the most significant events and stories that had the greatest impact in 2016? What, from your point of view, would those things be? As you look back on 2016, what were the issues and events that had the most significant or greatest impact this year? Well, quite a few things, of course, happened, and we would tend to have, recall things just recently that came to our attention that we've discussed, but stretch out a little bit and just assess the situation. We'll be doing this all week, incidentally. I hope you, those of you who celebrated the holidays, had a moment to connect with your families and friends in the way that we really should do more often. But things get in the way, and we say, oh, we got to pay attention to that. And then we have to run over here, and then we have to do the other thing. And we just don't reassemble ourselves at all, and it's a good thing to do. So I was hoping that you got that done over the holiday weekend. But we continue with this discussion because, as I said, this should be our year of reckoning, coming to terms with a number of things that we simply have put on the back burner, or it's not even on the stove at all. It is time for us to come to some definitive understanding of where we are in the scheme of things, but also where we are particularly with respect to society as a whole. 888-874-4888. I'm going to ask you some questions. Once you tell us what you think the biggest story was or still is for the year 2016. And the questions that I want you to kind of concentrate on, of course, you know, it's not the definitive answer necessarily, but I want you to get into the idea of looking at things for the specific purpose of analyzing not only those things, but where you are in relation to whatever it is you cite as a major problem or a major point of progress or whatever it is. So are you looking at two things at once and where they may, in your view, where they may have met, or whether there's still some distance that you still have to go? But we have to get to a point of reckoning because, as we see, things are building very quickly on another kind of reckoning. The administration, of course, is going to change. It has its own plan. And we shouldn't be stymied, and we shouldn't be feeling overwhelmed, and we shouldn't be afraid. That's the one thing. No fear. Whatever it is, we can deal with it. But are we clear about what it is? That's the one thing that is necessary. Are we clear about what it is that we're looking at? And therefore, how would that shape our approach to self-defense? How we gird ourselves in anticipation of whatever is going to happen. And in general, in life, a new year presents a new opportunity to kind of take a look, do some auditing, and figure out where we are in our own lives. Are we, according to us, are we on course or are we off course? Where are we? How does the society outside of our daily experience, how does that society affect us and what we think and what we do? At the end of the year is a pretty good time to do this kind of auditing. And you know me, I like the idea of trying as hard as possible to arrive at a point of clarity about things. Because that takes away the fear of the unknown. If you have a reasonably good feeling about where you are based on what you have been able to analyze, that you have some idea, you would be amazed, and I'm sure you've done this before, you have a greater sense of comfort. You have a greater sense of control. We never have full control, but you have a greater sense of control based on your continuing analysis of the reality that we are living in. And you therefore have greater information, quality information, with which you can begin the process of erecting your own defense. This is really what it's all about. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. What do you consider to be the most significant developments of 2016? And how did that affect you? How does it still affect you? What does it cause you to do or to want to do as we make the transition from 2016 to 2017, as we make the transition from one administration to another, from Obama to Trump, as we get ready for a new chapter in our lives, individually and collectively? What are we learning from the experiences we have shared and perhaps not shared? Maybe you have had a unique experience. How do these things help you to construct your own self-defense mechanism, your own system? We talk about that a lot. So 888-874-4888. It was amusing, and not at all amusing, to see today the quality of the conversation between the soon-to-be ex-president Barack Obama and the soon-to-be president Donald Trump. Here's Obama saying, look, if I wanted to run, if I were able to run for a third term, I could have done it. And Trump responding, absolutely not. There's no way you could win. And this is the kind of sophomoric thing that's passing as news. And it has just grabbed the attention of all the media. This is where we are. You know, a kind of spitting contest, you know, to see who could pee higher on a wall. You know, that's where we are. that's the level at which the leader of the country and the former leader of the country, that's the level at which they are discussing things now. I could, my muscles are bigger than your muscles. I could do it and you can. You know, obviously, we ought to be thinking differently. Obviously, there are issues that should be discussed, that should be part of the national discussion. And this is what we are presented with as news. This is where the media have taken us. And this is where the leader and soon-to-be ex-leader, this is the level at which they are conversing. I think it's very, very sad. We'll take the short break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. We'll be talking about the issues and events that you can recall for this year of 2016 that, in your view, have had significant impact on you and on the nation as a whole. Right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and today, an unusual thing that we're doing, but not really. We've done this at the end of the year many times before. We look back to find out what we can cite as a news development, a news issue, a news story, or something monumental that clearly had an impact on us individually and nationally, and what it was. How did it impact you? How does it prepare you for the new year? From Queens, Genetic, you're on the air.
Thank you. I know you wanted something from like earlier in the year, or you wanted to stretch out.
No, it's a long year, 2016. Pick your time.
Yeah, but I do believe this last vote in the UN with Israel was major, okay, that they were able to pass the resolution without the interference, you know, of the deep state, I would say. I think that is a major thing. And
now, who are the they? That give us some context here and tell us who are the they. You refer, well, of course, to the United Nations vote, correct?
Right.
And okay. So give us a little bit of background so people can get a sense of where you're going.
Okay. What I'm saying is that there has been an ongoing human rights violation in Israel. And it has been suppressed as far as the news is concerned. It's like it's okay, you know? And normally, if anyone brings a demand for a resolution in the UN for Israel, it's swatted down, but with the help of the government, the United States government, or the ambassador, or whatever. With their help, they're able to always stop this so that it doesn't get attention worldwide. Okay, and I'm thinking that this should change that dynamic a little bit. It should change the dynamic a lot. Now, I also noticed that Trump says he doesn't like it. You know, he thinks it shouldn't have been. I know he's an Israel supporter. And he's even talking about...
Well, actually, his expressed opinion about Israel, he said so. I mean, this is what he had said previously, that he was taking a neutral position with respect to Israel, and especially the question that the United Nations addressed, which was the continued construction of houses in settlements in the area that had been designated as, you know, off limits to Israel, but they continued to build houses there and continued to build settlements there. And this was the vote of the United Nations that they should be prohibited and this should be enforced.
Right. And that's why I'm saying this should make, this should be, it should be a major change in the situation there. Right? Because, I mean, they were just going to run over the rest of the state.
But why, in your view, should it work this time when it hadn't worked on many occasions before? This was not the first time the United Nations took such a vote and came to such a conclusion that there should be no further building of settlements, no expansion of, quote, Israel, unquote.
Now, that's true. But I'm thinking and hoping that this will embolden the their neighbors, their Arab neighbors, to, you know, to help them out, if possible, you know, to do something, because it's just a terrible situation there.
But actually, all right. But why? What impact, from your personal perspective, did it have on you?
What impact does the vote have on me?
What impact does the issue have on you? Yes.
The issue has impact. I mean, it has. It's the impact of the issue to me is the civil rights of others. Because, you know, if you just let things happen and you ignore things and they don't matter to you because they're not in your area, well, you can just expect to have the same thing happen to you. And I can't see how anybody could not be in some way affected by it because of the state of the world, the state of, you know, our state as being not in control of many situations that are happening, that they just, these situations just run over us.
And this was a decision of the UN Security Council. Now, let me ask you, what impact would it have on the United States, do you think, which has had any number of positions around this issue? At one time, the United States just looked away while they built the settlements. Another time, the United States had worked to get some kind of settlement on settlements, pardon the pun, but they had worked to at least designate an area where Israel was not to be permitted to build settlements because it encroached on Palestinian territory. So is the United States, what would prevent the United States now in order to save, let's say, its relationship with the Netanyahu government and with the Zionist element within Israel, that it would now go back to, it will reverse its previous position and say, well, look, we are encouraging you to observe previous rulings on the issue of settlements, but it is not prepared, the United States would not be prepared to go any further than just encouraging.
Well, yeah, that's about what they normally do. So I would have to agree with that. But with the rhetoric that comes out of Netanyahu's mouth, I'm hoping that, you know, other people will realize that they're not necessarily a friend.
I think people have seen indications that both on both sides, the United States and also the Israeli government, that, you know, the Israeli government has just taken a position, look, we do whatever we want to do. We do it, and then we deal with it later. But we are going to go ahead with our plans to expand into Palestinian territory. We're just going to do it, and you can't stop us. In fact, as you know, just recently, President Obama increased military aid to Israel. And it seems to me that this is a perfect time to reconsider aid to Israel when it breaks all of these commitments that had been worked out with regard to settlement. Well, you got us started. What do you see in the new year around this issue, if anything?
Well, you know, Eutrice, actually, I tried to call, if you don't mind, I'd like to just change a little bit off the subject, because I tried to call you Friday, and I couldn't get you, as usual.
And you sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault. I mean, people want to talk to you, and I'm just a little slow, you know. But I thought you had a very important issue going about, you know, what's in our hands, what we could do, right? And I was thinking, right, that what we need to do is really understand our economic situation, all right? Because regardless to what happens, the African community or the brown community in the United States has been depressed. And the way it's been depressed is economically, all right? The reason why I believe that we have all this insanity going on is because people can't make money. They can't, you know, we can't hire our own people to help them make money, to help them survive. And people are going to make money. They're either going to make it the right way or they're going to make it the wrong way. Right? And you're not going to stop that, you know, because people want to eat also. That's always a thing. But if we realize that when they print money, that and we work for it, that we are working for free, right? And try to get a hold of our economics. Because when we had our economics, let's say at Rosewood, Black Wall Street, those kind of things, you know, it was segregated, but our communities were intact, you know, and now they're shambles. And I just wanted to put that off because you mentioned that last week. I wanted to get it in then. So I wanted to really sneak it in now. So thank you.
You're listening to PRN, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN. We just had a little glitch here. I have no idea what happened, but we're back. And Genetics, are you still there? The number to call is 888-874-4888. We had a brief disconnection there, and I lost contact with the studio. So I'm flying a little bit by the seat of my pants right now because my system will take a while to reboot. So I'm going to ask the engineer if there's somebody else on the line at the moment, and we can continue the conversation. Okay. Well, we're talking about assessing 2016, and here's the idea of assessing 2016. It's time to really do what I call a reckoning. It's time for a reckoning, not only with the system. We've come to learn certain things about it, certain more things about it. But more importantly, we have to come to a reckoning about ourselves as political people. And that reckoning should involve us just looking at the scenario that we find ourselves in, look at how the system is functioning, look at what we expect to happen, not as in order to paralyze us with fear. That's not the deal here. We are not to be paralyzed by fear of what will happen. Quite the opposite. We ought to be looking at what we have already within our grasp and within ourselves to deal with whatever it is that comes. But what is it? And how do we situate ourselves for what we all know at some point will involve a protracted struggle, a fight? This administration has already indicated that it intends to go in a direction that we don't agree. We are having some concerns about whether it would be just, and, you know, the basic things that we always kid ourselves into thinking, well, maybe this time we can believe. No, you can't believe a system, because the system first is dedicated to itself and the preservation of itself. And it doesn't matter who's in the White House. We've learned that lesson. It does not matter who is in the White House. The system will preserve itself. That's its first order of business. The question, therefore, that comes to mind is, what is our security blanket? What is it that we can do to lessen the blow, or in some cases to completely avoid it and evade it? It's coming. We talked about that. It's coming. But the question is, how are we positioning ourselves to deal with a system that has been meticulously designed to remain exactly the same, irrespective of who the president is going to be? We can't wait any longer. We have to have something in place that helps us, you know, not only anticipate the blow, but blunt its impact. What is that thing? Have we found it yet? Are we anywhere close to it? You know, let them talk about hope, and let them talk about these ideals. We have been through these cycles before, and we shouldn't really have those things at the forefront of our minds, because what the system is communicating to you is it has already figured it out. It already has a plan. It has a plan. It may not be telling you the plan at the moment, and certainly will not tell you the whole plan, but it's got a plan. And it will vary only in a matter of degree to plans that were there before. But it is not going to be so radically different that you wouldn't recognize it at all. It just has different elements, different buttons that would be pressed at different times. But the plan essentially will remain pretty much the same. What are those elements I'm talking about? We're seeing evidence of it. We're having people fighting other people. We have a resurgence of open racism. We have the co-optation of the media. So that element of protection has already been removed. They're now in the business of fake news. At least, you know, some time ago, you could depend on the media to tell you something that is useful, that would help you gear up for what's coming. The media part of the plan. So that's gone. We look at the unemployment numbers. We look at what is going on in the economy. How will that change? Would it get a little better? Would it get a little worse? My thing is, it depends on where you are. But you should have done some kind of an auditing by now to decide exactly where you are. Where are you? Are you working? Are you working poor? Are you so-called middle class? What is about to happen to you and me with this new shift in philosophy and with the number one the task of maintaining the system as it is, with a tweak here and a tweak there? This is where we are. What systems do we have? What methods of protection do we have? What kind of buffer do we have to work with at this time? So we have to do these kinds of auditing and have a moment at which we get a clearer understanding and see where we are. We're in very grave danger because my assessment is, as a whole, we are misreading things. We are misreading. And we are not looking ahead, nor are we looking at the past to see that, frankly, there's a lot that we will be experiencing that has happened before. This would not be the first time that we would see a governmental system behaving this way. The problems that it will present as major national issues, this would not be the first time. So we've been, in some cases, we've been here before. And now comes the point at which we have to, if we really mean to prepare ourselves, we have to say, well, gee, we can't repeat ourselves. We can't repeat our mistakes either. We can't. And so we have to prepare. How do we prepare? We look at the past and we see there are ways in which we can extract certain things from the past. We see them happening again. But apart from what is going to be happening, is there anything else that we can bring to a study or an analysis of where we are so that we can muddle through? We have to muddle through. There's no question about that. We have to muddle through. But how do we muddle through? How do we do that? If we don't understand the system, and if we don't understand what is about to happen, and if we misconstrue the signals that we're getting, if we misread them, that's a very, very dangerous thing for us. We'll take another call if there's one on the line at the moment. Is there?
Yes. Chris from New York, David from Brooklyn.
Hello, how are you? You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Jose, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor.
Thank you, same to you.
I would like to hope that you had a great holiday, Christmas, and I wish you great health, lots of happiness, and much more money for the new year.
Well, I'll tell you, on the first two things, when it comes to Christmas and holidays like that, I generally just take it easy. And,
yes.
I'm not a Christmas person.
Uh-huh.
I just don't get into it.
Okay.
And that's been for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, with the Christmas thing, I'm just being a bit facetious. I'm not a Christmas person either.
Yeah. Well, what do you think is one of the issues or stories or occurrences or events of 2016 that you think had significant impact? And tell me why.
Well, I think the thing of significant impact is the ascension of the emperor to the White House, because many of us in the progressive movement didn't believe that. Well, I know I did, because I usually call in a local program in our community, and when Donald Trump announced that he was running for the president of the presidency of the United States, It was such a. You would think he was listening to Saturday Night Live, the banter and the banter and the comedy and the laughter and so forth, because everybody considered him a joker. And I told him, I was the only one that told him that, listen, this is not a joke thing. I said, this man you're looking at could very well be the next president of the United States. I said, you have not studied the American people, the history and the psychology of the American people. So I said, don't laugh. And just the other day, I was able to address some of them again to ask them who's laughing now. But I would believe that, want to believe, that this the programs that this man is going to put in place for all of us, I would think that if this can't open the eyes of and the minds of our people, then I don't know what else will. I would like to commend you for the great work that you have been doing in informing our people, trying to open up the minds of our people. As I said to you on a few occasions, that it's only a pity that the information that you are putting into our communities not more widely assimilated into our community, in the schools, in the churches, in the Caribbean and Africa, all over the place. Because you have, yes, you have a loyal listenership. But my professor, it is only reaching a few believers. It is not getting to the where it ought to really get to. And when I go around our community and I see the behavior of our folks, yesterday I was with a group of brothers and sisters, and when I looked in that group and I saw the amount of resources there, the resources on the lady's head, I saw it in the gadgets that they were laughing at me with my little flip phone. I saw people there with phones that it is worth hundreds of dollars. And I look at the kind of money that we could use, we could put to better use. But we are just living in this world of make-believe. And we are lost. I saw a woman there with hair around Rapunzel, dropping all the way down to her waist and so forth. And I know these things cost a lot of money. And we can understand that the things that we are doing is working against our own interests. These are funds that we could be using to pool collectively to do things in our community.
But that can't solve the
world's the problems that ails our people. So I am an old timer. And I've been marching and demonstrating and writing petitions and contributing financially otherwise to all kind of movements from way back, UAM, NAN, other groups and so on and so forth, Lumber Brass, all of them. And still, we are not any closer to where we ought to be. And so I now am with a couple of organizations where we are trying to pool resources together to do something financially and try to also get to some of the young people and try to point them in the right direction. But we are in serious shape, and this man coming to office, if this doesn't open up our eyes, then I don't know what will. But the real story, what I called you about...
Hold on, Jose. I mean, you raise an issue, but you're not particularly on point. The question you started answering, and then you went off on a whole different tangent there. But what you said is extremely relevant, but it is, I have to tell you, you're trying to make me embarrassed here, because that is the next round of discussions that we're supposed to be having for the new year. We try to close out this old year by discussing what, in your view, was the most significant event or issue and the impact it has had. So I think you've done a good job. You've told us about the fact that the election of Trump was and is one of the most significant things that happened in 2016. But you also have set us up for the next leg of the discussion, which is, now what do we do? So thanks so much for getting us started in that direction. Thank you.
Okay, my
for calling
professor.
And interest.
All the best for the new year.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for that. Chris from New York, you're on the air. What would you say was one of the most significant developments or issues of 2016?
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Thank you.
I would have a hard time answering the question, and I would have gone with the election of Trump. But since a previous caller mentioned the abstention of the United States for the first time regarding the settlements in Israel, I would have to go with that because, you know, when you get into the election of Trump, it's a long story. The whole election just generally, it's not just about Trump. But I just needed to address this because, you know, I've been following the Palestinian issue, as I'm sure many other people have, from the 80s when I got really involved in it, you know, in the early 80s and started to really understand, and all through the 90s and all of the, you know, wars that took, the bombings that took place and the more recent ones in Gaza when Obama was elected. And I've kind of, obviously, in more recent years, because they haven't really been covering it that much because other things have replaced the interest in Palestine, I've just kind of withdrawn from it, and I've found a little bit of peace of mind. But this last, I'm kind of wondering, and I would like to hear what your view is. I think that this is very important for several reasons. One, I think, is that anyone who has followed the foreign policy of the United States through various presidencies, it's not just Obama, and you realize that the foreign policy of the U.S., has very, very little change over the last, I don't know, I'm not sure how far back I can go, but let's just go back to the 80s, because that's when I started becoming interested in the Palestinian issue, you know, became very well aware of it, I should say, all right? It doesn't change. I mean, if you look at other areas, even Western Europe, where there are unresolved issues regarding occupations and land, regarding countries, it has never changed. I mean, you get a lot of lip service. But it's always the interest of the, you know, what the deeper state and the military, you know, the Pentagon and other agencies of the United States regard as, you know, U.S. interests, you know. And it never changes. It has never changed over the years, even when it allegedly had come close to a sort of Palestinian state. It was always the same result. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm a little suspect. I think somebody called it a gutsy vote this time because the United States didn't actually vote against the resolution. They abstained, which is what allowed it to go to pass, if I understand correctly, right? Now,
that's correct.
They have never
done
that. They have never done that before, you know. And in a way, I guess it's gutsy to some degree, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, well, I don't really want to vote on this because I don't want to be blamed for voting against you, so I'm just going to abstain. But I guess, to be nice, we can give them a point to say, well, at least you allowed it to go through without actually having the integrity to say, you know, this is wrong. Now, I'm wondering why President Obama at this point in time didn't have the, you know, was a little more audacious to allow this to happen since he's leaving office, because, correct me if I'm wrong, I think in 2011 there was another vote that had taken place, and the United States, as usual, had voted against the resolution, so it didn't allow for anything to pass. So I'm not quite sure whether there are things behind the scenes that we are being played like a cheap fiddle or an expensive Stradivarius, you take your choice. You know, I'm not quite sure whether there are positions that are taken that people don't want to be responsible for exposing in public. You know what I mean? I don't understand. I mean, he's leaving office, and it's happening now. Maybe it's for his legacy. Judging from the results, I'm not sure if anything is going to happen. I really don't. I mean, I would like to see it happen. I think that there are way too many powerful forces working against any kind of resolution of the Palestinian issue. At this point in time, there are so many settlements in the Palestinian territories, I'm not even sure that a contiguous state is possible. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I would like to hear your sort of sense of why you think it was allowed to go through this time. Is it an egotistical part on the part of the Obama administration? Is it because Netanyahu doesn't come on at one? I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot I can say on it. I just wanted to have a little bit of open air to ask that question because it's something that is completely sort of dismissed to the side. You know, there's something
well,
to
I
be
think,
said about. Yeah,
I think it is. I think it is Barack Obama's way of thumbing his nose both at Netanyahu, that he has had very, very rocky relations with, and leaving a gift for Donald Trump to show a sense of, well, look, since you're the great wizard, you'll figure it out. I'm out of here. But there's also another issue to consider. That is, before he left, Barack Obama allocated one of the most generous military aid packages to the same Israel. So in the scheme of things, a vote would have been a kind of cosmetic censure, but he delivered the real deal to Netanyahu, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That he took care of business. And he leaves behind a problem for Donald Trump to solve. Trump has taken the position, as you may recall from his campaign, that nobody owns him, certainly not Israel. Israel does not mm-hmm. own him. So I guess it's one of the ways in which heads of state insult each other. And
mm-hmm.
but the record shows, though, that Barack Obama did deliver all that money in military aid. He already sealed that deal. So he took care of business before he left. Netanyahu, who intends to just go ahead building the settlements anyway, doesn't view the U.S. decision of abstaining as any major deal. It's really not a big deal because he's going to go ahead and do what he wants to do anyway.
That's right.
And
so in a sense, we're being played in a way.
And he handed the diplomatic problem to the Trump administration. Let them figure it out. But we have to remember that he's already met his obligation to Israel and to Netanyahu by giving them all these arms and a
guarantee. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that because I think I know that he did that. It's just that it kind of slipped. It didn't get that much coverage that it deserved, you know, amidst all of the other hullabaloo that was going on. And so that's a very important point that you just brought out right now because it kind of answers my question a little bit more. I'd kind of forgotten about that, that we're kind of being played. You know, it's kind of, well, let's just put on your makeup and your beautiful dress.
This is how they do things
right.
At that level. But the record would still reflect that Barack Obama did not abandon Israel. See,
no, of course not.
Barack Obama would say, listen, before I left, look how much money. I've always supported Israel. I've never abandoned Israel. This matter of the settlements, certainly Donald Trump and his very seasoned foreign policy cabinet member would then be able to deal with that. But that is not nearly on the in the scheme of things with regard to Netanyahu and the Zionist regime. Barack Obama has already scored points. Now,
can I just say one more quick thing about Trump? Not about Trump necessarily, but I just need to kind of throw that in there. I want to make one comment because I heard the previous caller saying about, you know, and I don't disagree with him. I mean, everybody thought it was a joke when he, you know, threw in his hat in the race and he was elected. I mean, nobody would have believed it. But I need to make a distinction here that I think is important. Donald Trump is not one of the political elite. You know, money has nothing to do with it. He is the business elite. And there is a distinction there. And the reason I say this is because I was listening to an interview a couple of nights ago with, John Stewart was on Charlie Rose. I just caught it by accident. It was last week. And I think they're developing a new show. He made a statement, because he's very bright, John Stewart. He wasn't joking around. They were talking about how his program was and politically the influence that he had, et cetera. And he made a point. He said, Donald Trump is not a Republican. And I just, you know, he went on to say other things. And I just want to point that out because I think a lot of these characterizations, and I'm not defending him, okay? If I were his advisor, I would have told him, look, you either stop speaking like this or you're not going to get any, you know, I mean, I don't just instinctively agree with the way he expresses himself. But I think in many ways, he gets to be a sort of a scapegoat. In other words, all of the things that have been taking place within the systems of America for the last, let's just say, since 9/11, not to give it that wide of a range of years, okay, is it was all going on. And Donald Trump kind of popped up there, even though he's been around. I remember him from the 80s, okay? And he's kind of like, everybody now can say, oh, he did it because he's the fascist and he's the dictator. Has everybody not looked to see how America, to use it in quotes, has changed since September 11th and the laws that have passed in this country regarding our privacy, regarding our sense of person, that we can go to the airport?
We're kind of out of time, I'm afraid. But I just wanted to solidify this point with regard to Israel and settlements. Barack Obama has already done for Israel its bidding that Israel itself believes to be most important. It's not worrying about a decision, a UN vote on settlements. This is not the first time that you... They're not worried about that. They're going to go ahead and build the settlements and go through another round of criticisms and so forth, which they will ignore. But the record shows that before he put his foot out the door, Obama delivered to Israel what it demanded. That's the issue. Yeah, you got to pay attention. This is how they operate at that level. We know it is already established, it is known, and it's expected that Israel will continue to build its settlements. The United States would put up a kind of token resistance to it in this form of abstention, for example, on this. It didn't have the guts to commit. And Obama has a defense. He would say, well, look, we tried, we didn't do anything, but we didn't take a vote. So we left the situation open so that the next administration can pursue it. But the most important thing for us to pay attention to is that money in military aid has already been okayed and Israel is okay with it, pleased as punch with Barack Obama. Thanks so much for calling. Yes, we will continue the discussion tomorrow because we really should take a look at what this year has taught us and how it equips us in one way or the other to anticipate and maneuver the administration that is on its way. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crowe.